Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Wonder Woman was one of America's first female superheroes, and how she evolved is a story about how America has viewed women over the years. At times, the country has embraced an heroic Wonder Woman. At other times, it squashed that ideal. In its place, a more domesticated superhero. The story of Wonder Woman is told in the documentary Wonder Women, the untold story of American superheroines. Today, views of women as told through heroism in popular culture, just in time for a library event tonight. With us today is Christy Guevara Flanagan. She's director of the Wonder Woman documentary. Christy, nice to have you. Welcome.
My pleasure.
Brenda Bethman is also here. She's director of the UMKC Women's Center. Brenda, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Daniel Amrine is the author of the blog Journey into Awesome, a critical look at comics and culture. And Daniel, nice to have you too. Thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, Christy, what role did Wonder Woman play in your own growing up? Tell us about that.
Well, I was familiar with Wonder Woman from the TV show, the Linda Carter incarnation from the 70s, and that was definitely my generation's superheroine. And for me, I was a fan. I wasn't probably the biggest fan, but what I realized in looking back was that prior to Wonder Woman, I didn't really have a figure I could emulate on the playground. You know, there's sort of a limit to what a princess can do with her physicality when you're running around and being active. And here came Wonder Woman, and all of a sudden, you know, I could run around and twirl around, to be more accurate, become something larger than life, larger than who I was, and actively play all the games that the boys were playing.
Because for those who forget, Wonder Woman sort of adopted her powers by twirling on the screen, right?
Right, and that was something actually Linda Carter added to. They didn't know how they were going to all of a sudden transform her. It wasn't something they had to figure out in the comic book version. So they decided to, she'll just spin, and through the miracle of television, they would have a big flash and an explosion, and she would be, instead of going into the telephone booth, that's how she would become a superhero.
You know, Brenda, was Wonder Woman important to you as a kid growing up?
A little bit. We watched the TV show, but the one that we actually played a lot with, and I don't remember the name of the show, was the Wonder Twins.
Mm-hmm.
It was a cartoon, I guess because I had a sister and we would fight over who got to be Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
So we would always do the, you know, wrist thing, the Wonder Twin powers activate.
Yeah.
It was our big thing. And one was a man and one was a woman, but we didn't care.
Because at that age, it's important to have something, right? I mean, kids want to copy somebody out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was really bookish, so I was really into Nancy Drew, was kind of my superhero.
Mm-hmm. And did she have magical powers? She didn't, did she?
She didn't, but she still solved all the mysteries and got the bad guys, and she outsmarted them, and to me that was the coolest thing.
Yeah. Well, Daniel, Wonder Woman wasn't the first woman superhero. Who was?
That is a complicated question. largely depends on your definition of superhero.
Right.
There are a lot of early heroines. Some had superpowers. Some had secret identities. Now, keep in mind, a lot of this, some of these early pulp characters,
right,
which are the pulps, are kind of the precursor to the comic books. They're made on real pulpy, nasty paper.
I remember.
And there's an early one that actually came out in 1937. She was Olga Mesmer, the girl with the X-ray eyes.
Yes.
And she had super strength, and she had X-ray vision. She actually predates Superman. But this was designed more for male readers. This was in a series, Spicy Mystery Stories. And it was...
Well, explain that just a little bit. She appealed more to male readers because why? I'm afraid to ask, but I want to ask anyway.
Well, this character was very much created for the male gaze. Her powers kind of came about when she became sexually aroused.
Mm.
She was part of a whole series that Culture publishers put out. They had a Spicy Stories line, and they had Spicy Mystery Stories, Spicy Detective Stories, Spicy Adventure Stories. Pretty much any genre that you could think of, they had a sexed up version that they would do. These are, when you think of the early 30s and 40s, you think of the, like, the books with the monster coming at the woman and the woman tied up looking all scared.
Yeah.
this is what we're talking about right here, or kind of this genre.
And then there was Sheena, right, who appeared in the UK, I want to say the mid-1930s.
Yeah, she first appeared in the UK in 37. She appeared the next year in US, and she was kind of a jungle girl, which was a whole genre. She was basically a distaff version of Tarzan, or a female version of Tarzan. She beat Wonder Woman to press by a couple years, and even though she didn't have superpowers, she had kind of some of the same themes. She had a mate named Bob, a guy named Bob that was always getting into trouble, and she would always swing in and save Bob, have to untie Bob from, you know, the people attacking him.
It's kind of an interesting role reversal, you know, for those times, right?
Yeah, definitely. In some ways, comics are a mixed bag. Sometimes, in some ways, at various times, they've been more progressive, sometimes less. It wasn't totally uncommon for a male to play the damsel in distress role in some early comics, but it was still, more often than not, obviously, it was still a woman. People like Sheena and Wonder Woman, they weren't all oddities, but it definitely wasn't commonplace.
Well, Christy, Wonder Woman herself came along in December of 1941, right around Pearl Harbor, just to put an event with that date. Who created her, and why was she created?
So the creator of Wonder Woman was a really interesting man named William Moulton Marston, and he had not written comics prior to that. He was actually a psychologist, and he was really interested in seeing comic books to be used as a form of education, and had his eye towards creating a hero that would be a role model for other girls.
So we had good intentions here.
He had good intentions. And in fact, if one thing that impressed me, I wasn't familiar with those early Wonder Woman comics when I was beginning to think about a film. And I went back and I found them, while there are interesting aspects to the early Wonder Woman comics that I'm sure we'll also get into, I found it really radical. Just this idea that a woman would be at the center of the narrative. She's not a sidekick. She's not a daughter or a wife. It's her story. She's at the center of the narrative. The story always begins and ends with her, and that still felt really radical. Also, there's other elements to that as well. She comes from the land of Amazon, so it's this matriarchal society, and she's actually comes as a migrant, really, to this, our universe, to teach us how to be better people. And I think part of that is also to teach us how to be stronger women and how to look to women as leaders.
And she had what kind of impact on the culture when she hit in 1941?
Well, it's hard to gauge. You know, you do get you can go back and look at the letters that were written, and there were certainly plenty of young girls that were readers, and they were targeting that audience. But I think that, not unlike Sheena, she became also of interest for a lot of young male readers.
Mm-hmm.
and that's where the more problematic legacy remains, that you have these characters, and the question is, who are they, you know, who's the audience, who are they made for? And I think when you look at the way that they're dressed and some of the plots, it can't be all just for a female audience, you know, and comics in general have been seen to be for a largely male audience.
So you wanted to make this documentary. Why?
Well, I was just interested in pop culture, really. I was interested in looking at the ways in which our pop culture has a lot to be desired in terms of representations of women and how that impacts women and girls. But I also wanted to show up some potential role models. And I think that's, for me, Wonder Woman is full of potential. Maybe it's not completely realized. She's still running around in a swimsuit and has, you know, a figure that is idealized. But there's a lot of potential there in just having a female role model who is larger than life, who is a superhero, who is an action hero that's going to go out, conquer villains, save the day, and that's a place that girls can find comfort and need to find comfort as well as boys.
You know, Brenda, one thing that struck me about this documentary is even when you get to the end, just dovetailing off of what Christy just said, you still get this very clear impression that we still, as a society, really aren't where we need to be, where we should be, at least in the views of a lot of folks out there when it comes to female superheroines.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's definitely true. There's been a lot of press lately about why there are no movies featuring female superheroes. And I think they're doing a Wonder Woman movie, or...
They're not doing a Wonder Woman movie, but she is going to appear in the second Man of Steel Superman sequel.
Okay.
But then there was controversy over the woman they picked. And a lot of body shaming and saying she was too skinny and she wouldn't be a good Wonder Woman. And a lot of really hostile, negative, unpleasant snarking about her as Wonder Woman.
Was that justified in your view?
No, absolutely not. I don't think – well, but I think body snarking is never justified. So
okay.
It wasn't about her ability to play the role. It was solely about her size and whether she was capable of doing this based on her body. But there has been a push from a lot of folks to try to get Hollywood to do a movie that would be featuring a female superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of pushback. It often revolves around money, saying that women can't carry movies. No one's going to go see a movie that has only a woman superhero. Maybe the Hunger Games and Divergent success will change that.
Yeah.
You could argue they're superheroes in some ways.
I was going to say, is that true? Is there anything to back up this notion that women who play superheroes, those movies don't do as well as movies led by men?
Well, there's no proof because they haven't made any.
They haven't made any. It's a hard argument to make then, right?
But if you look at the recent success of Twilight, Hunger Games, and Divergent, I think the argument that women-led movies can't carry an audience is simply not true.
Yeah. Daniel, do you have any thoughts about that?
I do, actually. There have been a very few movies starring female superheroes, and they haven't done well, but that is not because of the superheroine herself. They did an Elektra movie a couple years back that was just not a good film. They did the Catwoman movie, which again was not watchable. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, whereas Hollywood will make a terrible movie starring a woman, and then one movie starring a woman flops, and then they use that as an excuse to never try it again.
Yeah.
You know, if a movie starring a man flops, Hollywood isn't going to say, oh, well, that's because people don't want to see men in movies.
Mm-hmm.
But women are treated as a niche market in most media, comics, movies, what have you.
Yeah.
So it's definitely – I think it's definitely time for the movie studios to step up. I mean, we've had a whole slew of great superhero movies. You know, we had Batman. We had Captain America, Hulk, Iron Man. We just have a huge number of male-led heroes, and there have been a couple female characters that have done well in the movies, you know.
Yeah.
Great actors. Captain America 2, we had a bigger role of Scarlett Johansson playing Black Widow, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that it's far past time for those women to get a starring role.
Yeah. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking this morning about the impact of Wonder Woman on American culture and women superheroes in general. And for our listeners out there, particularly the women, how far back do you recall a female superhero? Who's your favorite superheroine and why? You can give us a call, 816-235-2888. Again, that's 816-235-2888. Well, Christy, maybe the 10-point bonus question this morning. Do girls need superheroes more than men?
Well, I don't know if they need them more than men, but I think they need them. And so when there's a lack of them, you're really limiting some of the potential for girls.
And that's what I've heard, that because there's so few of them, that maybe there's a greater need than there would be for men, because men and boys have such a wide variety to choose from.
Well, I think that's true, and I think it also comes down to toys and merchandise. There's a lot of action figures, and most of those are male. You know, girls need those action figures. They need to see themselves as protagonists, as active participants in their own life. And I think these fantasy films and fantasy stories like comic books and superheroes are places that can be great for girls to see those kinds of reflections and to get that kind of exciting adventure, call to adventure that they do need.
Yeah. Brenda, how would you address this notion of, do girls need superheroes more than men or not?
I think I agree with everything Christy just said.
Yeah.
But certainly the lack, we need more. I don't know if they need them more than men, but we definitely need more female superheroes that girls can look up to and emulate. You know, we had Chelsea Clinton here a few weeks ago, and she always likes to say that you can't be what you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
And so if girls don't see female superheroes, they can't imagine themselves there.
Yeah. Daniel, how about you?
I agree with everything that's been said. The need is greater because of the lack. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. No question about it in your mind.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's high past time. Some of the publishers have started to take notice as far as comic books go. There have been a few recently, Marvel Comics, who puts out Captain America and Iron Man. They've started putting out some more female heroes in their comics that have been great. Captain Marvel is one that's been getting a lot of attention. And I think that's great. They're still definitely in the minority, though, even with those steps that are being made.
Christy, again, she's the director of this new film that just came out, Wonder Women, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. You know, this notion, the film points out very clearly that there are consequences. There have been consequences for women over time when they're shown to be strong. What do you mean by that? What kind of consequences are we talking about?
Well, I think when we look at a character like Wonder Woman, a superhero who's, you know, as strong as Superman, there are ways in which her power is mitigated. And you see that with other action heroines, and certainly you see that with our own female political leaders. And I think the emphasis, mainly it's on the emphasis in their appearance, their physical appearance. So what they're wearing, how they're posing, being tied to a love interest. Those are all ways of compromising and displacing the focus on their power and strength.
I thought, you know, Thelma and Louise was such a great example, and you talk about it in this film. You know, here they are. Here are two women who stood up to men, and then in the final scene of the film, they're in their car, and they drive off the edge of a cliff, and they die. Because, you know, this notion of a consequence for standing up to men.
Right. Well, I think that's an interesting example to look at, because what does that say about our culture and how we think about powerful, strong, healthy women, and that they can't even exist. You know, they have to die at the end of this narrative.
Hey, Daniel, do you notice that a lot? Is that a trend you see in these films and the way superheroines are portrayed over time?
Yes, definitely over time. I mean, if you look at it from a historical perspective, there have definitely been some times that they're portrayed better than others. There's definitely a backlash. You know, to bring it back to Wonder Woman, you have a really strong Wonder Woman in the 40s. She's fighting Nazis just alongside all the men. And then afterwards, in real life, when all the men come home, they change her book into a romance book. And suddenly they replace even the features in the back. In early 1940s Wonder Woman, they had a feature called Wonder Women of History. And they would feature real-life women like Joan of Arc, Amelia Earhart, things like that. Just a short comic, historic comic. After the 40s, that was actually replaced with a feature called Marriage a la Mode, where suddenly they were, instead of looking at historic women, they were looking at marriage traditions. So the message was clear. There was this backlash and almost a backstep of, okay, women stop being strong, Now it's time to focus on getting hitched.
Yeah. You know, Brenda, as Gina Davis, who's such a strong advocate for women and has been for so many years, has she said anything about the ending of that film? Do either of you know, even you, Daniel, has Gina ever said anything about the way that film ended, and maybe she had to do it over again, she might have done it differently?
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
It's
just
possible.
Again, your point is so provocative.
I don't know, I don't know the answer to that question, but maybe the answer is that Gina Davis now has a research center called Women and Gender in the Media, something like that.
I just looked at it last week.
And she's really focusing on the representations of women and girls in the media, but looking in particular at cartoons and the disparities there in terms of just the amount of female characters versus the amount of male characters in animated films and TV shows, and how just that figure alone is not of equal proportion.
It's absolutely stunning. I've seen some of those numbers. And she also points out, and you do too in the film, when it comes to decision-making positions in Hollywood, women control 3%, or I forget the exact stat, but it's something like that.
Right. It's phenomenally low. In fact, Hollywood and media companies are one of the worst in terms of having women in positions of leadership where they can really make decisions about what gets greenlit, what kinds of films we see, even in terms of distribution.
And it's so counterintuitive because Hollywood has this reputation as this liberal bastion. You think it would be flipped, or it would be a leader in this regard.
You would think, yeah. And certainly a lot of the female actors have been activists and have been outspoken. And thank God for, you know, people like Cate Blanchett who use the Academy Awards to speak to that very issue. But it's moves at a migratory pace change, and particularly in that industry.
Lots of phone calls here. The question on the table, who is your favorite superheroine and why? Let's go to some phone calls right now. Let's go to Gene from Fairway. Gene, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. And well, my favorite, of course, would be Sigourney Weaver in that the Alien franchise, which refutes Hollywood's idea about when we won't support a woman hero or superhero. And then there's Mila Jovovich, I think, for Resident Evil, as well as Sandra Bullock just recently here with Gravity. Big money box office all the way with all three of those. And the reason they won't support, the reason that there aren't more women than superheroes is because the financial packagers of the movies, the directors, the producers, they're all Caucasian males and very few women involved. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you for the phone call. And, you know, Brenda Bethman, director of UMKC's Women's Center, what do you say to what Gene had to say there?
I think he's right to point out those films. Again, the Alien series absolutely refutes the idea that people won't go see a film with a female protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
They were really successful. Gravity is another good recent example.
Sandra Bullock, right.
It's about who's making the decisions.
And I think what's interesting there, when you compare Aliens and Gravity, and they're, 30 years apart, right? We're having the same conversations. The directors, the producers had to answer to the same people in terms of having a woman lead a science fiction role.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been 30 years. And Aliens has proved how powerful and successful a science fiction film with a female action hero can be.
Let's go to Jennifer from Kansas City, Missouri. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment that I agree that more often than not, female protagonists in films like these are portrayed negatively, mostly by the writing, and that if you look at examples like Joss Whedon with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the series, and as well as more recently The Dollhouse starring Eliza Dushku, those both depicted extremely strong women that were fighting for themselves and doing great.
So you think the paradigm is shifting in Hollywood?
I think it can, and I think it just needs to be done better. They need to have better writers and better directors and better casters for films and series like these.
All right. Jennifer, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Darren from Olathe. Darren, you're on Up to Date.
Great conversation, guys. I think Sigourney Weaver definitely kicks butt. I think I was going to pick Seven of Nine from Star Trek, and I also agree with your last caller that I think the culture can be changed. I'm a big video game guy, And I know, you know, whether it be just simple racing games, you know, motorcycle games or motocross or even, you know, race cars or whatever the game is, oftentimes it's full of guys and maybe one or two women. And much of the time, the women characters in the games are much stronger than the guys. And I love picking them. And I love it when my boys go, "Why do you pick the girl, Dad?" And I go, "Because she's going to kick your fanny. Now let's play." And I think you're right. The culture can definitely change. I think the demand is there. You see it in the TV shows and such that we've been mentioning, but I think it's time for Hollywood to step up and make some better movies.
All right, Darren, thank you for the call. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. Let's grab one more before a break here. Wesley from Lee's Summit. Wesley, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Very interesting topic. I would have to say the Nancy Drew mysteries from the late 30s, starring Bonita Granville. I actually started off as a Hardy Boy mystery reader, but after seeing that series, that really captivated my attention. She's very witty, very good actress, and I was just wondering if you have any information on Bonita Granville and how well she was received at the movies.
Any thoughts, panel?
I do not. You know, I read A History of Nancy Drew years ago, and I don't remember what it said about that.
Daniel, any thoughts?
No, sorry.
Fresh out on that one.
Any authority on that one?
Yeah.
But I would love to see Nancy Drew brought back. I think she'd be great. She'd play really well right now.
That's interesting. Wesley, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about female superheroines. We'll turn to the Red Tornado, the Woman in Red, and a whole bunch more. We'll take your phone calls, too, at 816-235-2888. We're wondering, what characteristics do you expect to see from the Wonder Women of today? You can email us at uptodate@kcur.org. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking about the impact of female superheroines and how they evolved over the years. Our guest, Christy Guevara Flanagan, she's director of the documentary Wonder Woman, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. She'll be speaking this evening at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Plaza Branch. That's at 4801 Main Street. It'll be followed by discussion led by Christy talking about this issue. That's tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the branch on the plaza. We're also joined today by Brenda Bethman. She's director of the UMKC Women's Center. And Daniel Amrine, he's the author of the blog Journey into Awesome, A Critical Look at Comics and Culture. You know, let me grab one more phone call here from Rita, who wants to lead us, I think, into a conversation about how Wonder Woman evolved over the years from the 1940s forward. Rita, good morning. Nice to have you.
Good morning. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Wonder Woman and I were born in the same year, and she meant the world to me. We fought Nazis together. I suspect that was mainly, given my age, the result of role-playing in the street with the other children. I realized that a little bit later she was replaced by Little Lulu, and that's probably because she became a romantic figure after the war.
And tell us about Little Lulu, Rita. Who is that?
Oh, you don't know who
I don't
Lulu.
Know Little Lulu. I'm sorry. Bad host.
Yeah. She was a little girl who was independent, and she went off in the woods a lot. She dealt with a witch, et cetera, et cetera. But as far as reading comic books is concerned, somehow Wonder Woman became less accessible to me when I got to an actual reading age. But I enjoyed the TV series when I was older than I should be enjoying it. The very figure of Wonder Woman is important to me because we fought Nazis together.
And again, you're saying that, if I understand you right, Rita, that Wonder Woman evolved in a way into the 40s and 50s that you weren't too crazy about.
Well, I wasn't real conscious of it, but correct, yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for the phone call. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, let's talk, Christy, about how Wonder Woman evolved over the years, depending, you know, on what happened in society. For example, what happened during you know, and after World War II, when it came to show how she was being depicted back in those days?
Partly what my film looks at is how comics reflect back to us changes in society, and I think Wonder Woman is emblematic of that. In the 40s, it's interesting that she's created a time where women are seen as being really strong. They're invited to participate in the war effort. They're working in jobs and in fields that they hadn't had access to previously, in factories, being pilots, flying planes. There was even a women's army corps, auxiliary army corps. And they're being invited by the culture to participate in these ways and become leaders. And then after the war, when the men come home, they need their jobs back. The whole structure, economic structure of the country is dependent on, you know, having those veterans take back their jobs and positions. And so
things flipped.
You all of a sudden see women in popular culture being depicted in the homemaker role. You have things like Leave It to Beaver and A Father Knows Best, and these kind of typical 50s TV shows.
Patriarchal,
Where the woman is where she should be, you know, raising the kids and making dinner and being witty and just as smart as she was beforehand, but all of a sudden in a different role. And Wonder Woman, as we've talked about, is no different. She becomes much more of a comic about romance rather than adventure.
And even Lois Lane. What happened to Lois Lane in the wake of World War II? Because she changed dramatically, too. She no longer was pursuing a career in journalism. She wanted something very different than that.
Right. The comics in general in the 50s take a large shift. You have the comics code that's instilled, and it's kind of a whitewashing of comics. They were previously doing whatever they wanted, really, in terms of stories and adventures, and you had a range of stuff. And then there was a more critical eye on comics and people beginning to ask the question, well, what kind of effects are these going to have on our kids, you know? And you had that book burning in the comic world. And so they came up with a self-imposed censorship where they had the comic book code of authority that they would stamp on their comic books if they passed this code. And part of that code was seeing women again in more traditional roles and not being, you know, like Lois Lane was a go-getter career gal, and that was what was so exciting about her. But all of a sudden, you know, she's much more focused on just solely the romantic aspect of getting Superman's attention and getting him to marry her.
Let's fast forward to the 1970s and 80s, because again, in that time period, you see another kind of flip, you know, stronger women in the 70s and something very different during the Reagan years of the 80s. Christy, explain that to us.
Well, I think the 70s had, you know, the women's movement of the 70s reached mainstream families and homes and educational systems. And so pop culture, again, had to grapple with that and figure out, you know, what are we going to do with the changing society that we're in? By the time you get to the 80s, you get a real backlash. And when we talk about backlash to feminism, that's the 80s. And you have figures like Arnold Schwarzenegger, RoboCop, these really muscular men, Rambo, going out, being international cops in the global world, and just as brawny as you could be.
Brenda, as you look at popular culture over the years, this notion of a period where women show strength and seem to move ahead, is it often followed by a period then where you have a retrenchment, where you have sort of a backing off of that idea in some ways by culture at large?
It seems almost always that's how it happens. So if you think, too, about the 80s, movies like Fatal Attraction, where the single career woman is portrayed as absolutely murderous and crazed to have a baby and get married.
I remember that film. Yeah. That film stuck with me for a while. Yeah.
And Sigourney Weaver in what is the name of that film? Working Girl.
Oh, okay.
Again, where the woman who wants a career is portrayed as really evil and terrible, and the sweet-faced Melanie Griffith gets Harrison Ford at the end. So you see a lot of those roles. It'll be interesting, I think, to see what comes after some of the films that are out now, because we're having a small, strong woman movement.
Right now?
Right now.
And describe that to us.
If you think, and it's actually coming from young adult literature, which is what's really fascinating. So if you think of The Hunger Games and a character like Katniss, who unfortunately, though, gets kind of contained at the end. If you read the trilogy, she gets married and goes back to her district and stays there quietly. But she's still strong. The Divergent series, where they just put out the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of young adult literature with really amazing female heroines. And they're taking over film, too. So they don't have superpowers, but they're still really strong and active. And it'll be interesting, I think, to see if something follows that.
Daniel Amrine, again, he's the author of the blog Journey into Awesome, a critical look at comics and culture. Have you noticed the same kind of pattern?
Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, as the guests have said, it looks like every, let's say, 20 years or so, you kind of get a little boost and then a backlash. So we have the strong women characters, comics and media, the whole Rosie the Riveter thing, the 50s. And then, or I'm sorry, 40s, and then 50s, you have The Return Home and Leave It to Beaver. And then the 70s, you have Linda Carter, Wonder Woman, this whole resurgence on TV. And then the 80s. And then 90s brought about a whole slew of other strong characters, female characters, I should say. So it really does seem about, well, you get a decade and then a regressive decade, and then a progressive, and then a regressive.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, that's just a interesting phenomenon in our culture as you look back over the years, Daniel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of it is, you know, if you look at Gloria Steinem, who was a big part of kind of escalating Wonder Woman to the feminist symbol that she is today in the 70s, you know, of course, she selected Wonder Woman to be on the cover of Miss Magazine, the first issue. The same year, they also, Miss Books, put out a reprinting of some old Roman story. She was very much involved in this push to kind of create or help Wonder Woman turn into this big cultural phenomenon and the symbol. She talks about growing up with throwing Wonder Woman in the 40s. And then you get into 90s, you get into Riot Girl, the Riot Girl movement, things like that. This whole other group of women talking about growing up with, well, the Wonder Woman of the 70s. And it really seems like these activists are kind of going back to what they knew in childhood, which oftentimes they can thank for the activists of their day.
Yeah. Christy, in your documentary, Wonder Woman, you feature Gloria Steinem, and she's so articulate talking about, you know, these issues with this great perspective she has, and she's been in here before. I'm just wondering, how did you get her for your film? What kind of trick was that?
Well, Gloria Steinem is a very busy woman. She does a lot of speaking engagements. She's still actively writing books. People, of course, are calling upon her all the time to speak to these issues of feminism in our day. And so it took a lot of work. I knew that if we didn't get her and if we didn't get an interview with Linda Carter, we really didn't have a film if we were making a film about Wonder Woman. Those were the two women that I really wanted to speak with.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just perseverance and tenacity and faith that it would happen, even though I was already in production and filming other parts of the film. And I guess, you know, the thing about documentaries is they tend to take many years to make anyway. So what's another year that you're waiting for Gloria Steinem to say yes?
How many years did it take you to make this film?
It took us 4 years to make this film.
No kidding.
Yes.
Wow. And you did it without a narrator, a traditional, typical, conventional narrator who walks you through the film. Why did you go that way?
Well, as a filmmaker, I hope that we can rely on our, you know, the people that I speak with to give us that kind of information. And I don't want to have to write and be just the objective voice of truth. You know, I want to hear a lot of different people's opinions and perspectives and weave a story together that's going to be compelling and nuanced and at times contradictory as well.
Yeah. We're looking for our listeners. How important was Wonder Woman to you as a kid growing up? What impact did she have? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You know, there's an absolutely great website, Brenda. It's called geeksaresexy.net that shows what it would look like if female superhero costumes were designed like the females' costumes. Are you familiar with it?
Mm-hmm. I looked at it.
You know, what do you make of the revealing outfits that seem so often to go hand in hand with female superheroes, as we've discussed here? I mean, even Linda Carter's TV Wonder Woman was a little over the top on a whole lot of levels, it seems to me, but that's just me.
I think it goes back to Christie's point about that need to contain the strength. So women can be powerful and strong to a certain extent, but they still have to be sexy and pleasing for the male gaze.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about kind of the way female athletes are portrayed in American culture, I just had a student do a project on this. And so often they're also put out as very sexy, and that's what's popular, and those are the athletes who get the endorsements, and those are the athletes who are liked, because they're somehow less threatening by being sexy. There's nothing wrong inherently with being sexy, but it's the way that it's used, I think, to kind of make them seem less scary and less threatening.
Is that ever going to change?
Well, I should hope so, and I would hope with more women creators, writers, artists, particularly in the comic book industry, that are drawing women's figures and bodies, that would change, and they would bring more nuance, more authenticity, and understand that those poses don't have to be yielding and provocative in every panel.
But you sort of wonder, you don't see much sign that it is changing out there, Christy. I mean, you just don't see it.
Well, I look to the exceptions, you know, like the films Beth has talked about. Hunger Games, I was actually very pleased in the way her sexuality was represented, and I should say understated. It was a subtext. It wasn't the main text of the film. Her being a leader, trying to figure out how to be a hero, being called to action, those were the focus points of that narrative.
Boy, you still wonder, though. It just doesn't seem to be shifting at all. Again, lots of folks writing us to talk about superheroines that influence them. Jill emailed us her choice of a superheroine, Sabrina of Bewitched. She was beautiful, good, and fallible because she was trying to disguise her power, but it came out anyway. Greg nominates the woman of the Doctor Who series. He has often had strongly smart female traveling companions. They are frequently instrumental in saving him in a tight scrape, helping to figure out a mystery. And some even turn out to be better TARDIS drivers than the Doctor himself. What's a TARDIS driver? My oldest daughter loves this show, and I feel it gives her a very positive female role model. Do you guys know who I'm talking about there?
Well, I'm waiting for a female Doctor Who.
Yeah. Still haven't seen it yet. Rob tweeted us this, at KCUR, up to date, a Storm from X-Men. The comics and the TV shows were full of strong women. And Darren suggests another favorite heroine, Veronica Mars, on TV Note, so popular that crowdsourcing enabled a Veronica Mars movie to be funded earlier this year. Not bad.
Yes, I'm really excited about the Veronica Mars initiative, I guess you could call it. This was a TV show that was really popular, and I would say that TV in general has been a more interesting place for women characters. You have TV is serial in nature, so characters like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Veronica Mars and the character from Dollhouse, they have to be more nuanced because they're just coming, you know, there's stories of them series after series, and so you can make a non-one-dimensional female character, and it can be more interesting, and there's just more, sure, her story.
Daniel Brad emailed us this recommendation. I use the website amightygirl.com. Great heroine stories, not just comics, though I love comics too. My six-year-old wants to be Rouge from X-Men for Halloween. We had to assemble our own costume. Are you familiar, Daniel, with this website, amightygirl.com?
I'm not, actually.
Are you guys?
I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
Are you? That out afterwards.
Brenda, tell us about it.
It's a great website full of stories. I know it mostly from the fact that I think 95% of my Facebook friends share something from that website daily.
Oh, really?
I see a lot of their feeds, but they promote strong girl stories.
A good website for parents and their daughters.
It's a great website for parents. Also, speaking of the costumes, I just saw a piece on Huffington Post today that had what costumes would look like if women designed them.
Yeah.
And so they had She-Hulk and a whole bunch of other characters in their regular costumes, and next to it, other costumes. So the caller or emailer might want to look at that website to see if they can find a costume for their daughter.
One website I saw even had, I think, Superman and Batman, mm-hmm. and describe what they look like. Have you seen
the Geeks Are Sexy one?
Yeah, yeah.
This has been actually fairly popular lately. So to take men and put them in traditional women's costumes or poses. I've also seen a thing recently where they took advertisements and reversed them. So there was some Doritos advertisement, I guess, for the Super Bowl with a woman in bed with Doritos. I don't know. But they changed the gender roles. Mm-hmm. And it highlights how ridiculous some of these poses are. And that we see them as ridiculous when men do them, but we don't see them as ridiculous when women do them.
Interesting, isn't it? Interesting. Daniel, going back to some other early female superheroines, there were others. I'm thinking about the Red Tornado. Who was that?
Oh, the Red Tornado was great. She appeared in a comic, Scribbly was the name of the feature. It was a funny book. It was supposed to be comedic. And she was a rather large single mom. She had two children. Her husband died. She ran a grocery store, so she was a small business owner, single mom. And the mob came to shake her down for and went into protection money. She told them no. They kidnapped her daughter and her daughter's friend. And basically her son was like, oh, you know, one of those superheroes would be able to save the day of the day. So she put on a long john, Paris, a cape, and a pot on her head and swung in and beat up the mob. And rescued, you know, her daughter and her daughter's friend. And it was definitely a funny character, but she wasn't necessarily the butt of the jokes. But it was great. She eventually even took her daughter and her daughter's cursed friend as kicks. So they were the Cyclone Kids. So it was a female crime-fighting trio.
And the point of all that, you think, with the Red Tornado sort of making fun of traditional male superheroes, Daniel, was what?
Part of it was just the parody because superheroes were, you know, popular. But there's something there to it. Everyone thought that the Red Tornado was a man, and she never questioned it. She never questioned them. She never said, "No, I'm actually a woman." So everyone just assumed this Red Tornado and to save the day, and it was a man. Another interesting fact, I think, was her creator was actually Sheldon Mayer, who was the gentleman that went on to be the editor for the original Wonder Woman comics series.
Yeah.
So he was kind of involved in a couple different strong female heroes of the time.
There was also a woman, the Woman in Red, who debuted in March of 1940, a police officer by occupation who creates this persona for herself, one you describe as the first comic heroine with a solely superheroine feel. What do you mean by that?
So some of the other ones, like Sheena and some of these other ones were kind of more Jungle Girl, or they were more of an action hero. She actually wore a costume, a mask, and she kind of felt like Batman. One of the interesting things about her is her costume was actually pretty well covered her. Unlike a lot of the other heroines of the day, she wasn't running around in a bikini. Her costume was a flowing robe that actually de-emphasized certain areas that tended to be accentuated in other heroines of the day.
Yeah.
She was basically a toting Batman-type detective, so she's a lot of fun.
So, Christy, fast-forwarding to today, to sort of put a cap on all this, I mean, are we seeing many women drawing these superheroines and drawing and coming up with their stories, or is the cupboard still pretty empty?
Well, there are more characters and there are more initiatives, too, by the major comic book companies. And I think in general, women and girls are becoming more interested in superheroes and the comic book genre. You have more women and girls attending comic conventions and kind of demanding better characters and for for themselves, for their readership. And I think with social media, you just have a larger conversation that women and girls can be a part of in terms of, you know, when they're outraged by certain actions of the comic book industry, but also when they're impressed and enthusiastic about certain characters. And so I think it's an interesting time right now. And then with, as Beth was mentioning, the advent in terms of fiction, in terms of Hollywood films, these young adult novels translated to the big screen. There's some really great female characters out there right now.
How active is the Women's Center in terms of shining a spotlight on popular depictions of women that might be objectionable? Is that one of your central missions?
We do that a lot. We did a screening of Misrepresentation a couple of years ago, which is a great film on media stuff. We do a lot of body image campaigns. We do these kind of events with films. We also do try to do the opposite and highlight the popular or the positive.
Right.
So we have a book discussion every year where we talk about these kind of books and talk about strong female characters.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank all our panelists for coming on today. We're out of time. I want to thank Christy Guevara Flanagan, again, the director of the documentary Wonder Women, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
So good to have you. Brenda Bethman, who's director of the UMKC Women's Center. Thank you very much, Brenda.
Thank you.
And Daniel Amrine is the author of the blog Journey into Awesome, a critical look at comics and culture. Daniel, thank you very much. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.